It's so nice to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to talk.
No, what you have to say and what you will say will be really beneficial to us. So tell us who you are, Kelly, and what you do.
Who am I? So in terms of professionally, I work as a family intervention worker. Yeah. You know, I've worked with families for years and years and years. Working with predominantly like hard to reach young people, hard to reach young families where they've had loads and loads of services involved in their lives.
Yeah.
Lots of intergenerational kind of patterns of negative behaviour. So things like substance misuse, domestic violence, gangs, mental health. The whole shebang, you know. And I think it's becoming more complex now. So we kind of work with the whole family as opposed to just working with the young person.
So that's including the parents.
Including the parents.
The young person's siblings.
Be grandmother, uncle, aunt, you know, whoever's connected to the family who they want involved, who maybe has, like, who engages with the family, do you know what I mean? And kind of, you know, can add some value, basically.
Yeah. You're having to dig deep.
Having to go deep.
You
deep.
In the homes?
Yep, go into the homes. Yeah. Poor mental health is huge. Wow. You know what I mean? It's huge from, like, maybe grandparent to parent to now child is starting to, you know what I mean? It's starting to repeat certain patterns.
Yeah.
And it may not necessarily be their mental health, but it's learnt behaviour.
Yeah, yeah.
They then carry that on to their children.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of kind of digging. We do a lot of developmental histories, which is like maybe digging into their past.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, we'll look at like, what was your pregnancy like?
Oh, wow.
Which I thought, why would that have anything to do with what's going on with Johnny now? But actually, when you think about it, that is a very crucial part of a child's journey, how it begins.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you don't consider it beginning from inside though.
You don't even think about
giving
it.
Giving birth is the beginning.
You think, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But then research will show that whatever stresses that the mother may be going through during the pregnancy or even before the baby feels it, they talk about the cortisol, you know, that babies are kind of... are given cortisol by the mother because of their stress levels.
Yeah, yeah.
And babies are often born, you know, already quite frightened. So if a mother is experiencing domestic violence, that child is feeling that stress and is often born and they may be frightened, you know, they might be frightened when they hear noises, which generally they are, but it's different.
It's heightened.
It's heightened,
yeah.
So you get to understand that, you know, these families, they're not just bad breed and, you know what I mean, they're just out of order and they just need to pull themselves together. Yeah. Actually, there's a big story
there's
behind.
Stuff going on.
Yeah. And it's not easy to work through that because people have to be ready to, you know, to be able to own their own truths. And yeah, so that's my kind of day job. But I'm also a counsellor as well, which also helps with, you know, the day job as well.
I always hear that term, own your truth. You know what I mean? It's all over Oprah, it's all over Ilana Van Sant, it's all over the internet.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's such an ambiguous term. I'm just like, what is own your truth?
Own your truth. Now, I've only really started to understand that, I think for myself personally, recently, I would say like maybe in the recent years, you know what I mean? Like very kind of recent years. You need to be able to tell yourself the truth about what's actually happening with no heat and no judgment. You know, Ilana Van Sant talks about, you know, look at yourself with no heat and no judgment.
Yeah.
Think, oh, what's that about? That's about, and what I in terms of what I understand of it, and is you need to be able to sit in those really uncomfortable spaces of your life. Because what we tend to do is we do the most in order to kind of distract us from sitting and saying, do you know something? Actually, I messed up. I've got to own that. Actually, I messed up.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're all frightened of being vulnerable to actually say, yeah, I messed up.
It's pointing back at yourself.
It's pointing back at yourself. It's taking full responsibility. Yeah, yeah. you've messed up. Own it. It's okay to own it.
Yeah.
Yes, people may cuss and may point the fingers at you. Oh, yeah. But the reality is, so what?
Yeah, yeah.
It's happened.
Yeah.
But once you're able to own that and allow yourself to sit in that space, in that really uncomfortable space, and not run away from it, and just allow the feelings to kind of wash over you.
Yeah.
Then you're at the stage of you're ready to start doing something different. You wanna build some new habits. You wanna explore where that comes from.
Yeah.
For me, how I've worked on it is just build that relationship in order for, you know, I challenge, you know, just gently challenge.
Yeah.
And we go deeper and deeper and deeper. And before they know it, they're at a stage where they're like, actually, this is my fault.
Yeah.
And I am actually responsible for this.
How have you seen negative relationships impact children?
It's the cornerstone of, it's the core of the child's life.
Mm.
You know, relationship, how they see their parents relate, it's the blueprint of how they're going to be as an adult.
Yeah.
We literally replay scripts of our parents, our relationship, even our relationships with our parents. We replay it in our adult relationships, intimate relationships particularly.
Or even our choice of life partners. Our
choice of life partners. Could reflect
to what we've seen.
Yeah.
So I know from personal experience, I think at one time I was looking for everybody what resembled my dad, which was not a great resemblance to want to aspire to.
Yeah.
And what it was I've come from a domestic violence background, very, very heavy. I don't know if you could quantify it, but for me, I would say it was very, very heavy domestic violence to the point of nearly my mum being murdered in front of us several times. And so we saw that. But as we were speaking about before, about owning your truth, I think just before I got in a serious relationship with Curtis and before we got married, that stuff kept coming up for me where I felt like I had to deal with it. I had to deal with the fact that this man is not going to murder me. Do you know what I mean? Yes. This man's not going to put his hands around my neck. Although it did come up because we play fighting, and if he did have his hands on my neck, he'd be like, no, no, you can't do that. Not that he would have his hands on my neck in play fighting, but if there was a certain move made, it would be like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because that reminds me of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And between myself and my siblings, we've had to really, we talk about it. And we've had to say, this is what it is and this is how it's impacted us. And then I look at my brother as an example, who hasn't perpetuated what he saw. He didn't take up, you know, the same behavior as my dad and say, right, I'm going to use violence against the women I'm with. He hasn't done that himself. But I would say that's been through a lot of cultivating from a mum saying, this wasn't the right way. You guys have to choose another way. And us being conscious of what we've been through, us speaking about it and us owning it.
Yeah.
And us being really transparent to say, we are children who came from a very violent background. It may be manifested in different ways. And Kurt could testify to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in terms of me picking up my hand and thrusting it in someone's face, it's not something I've done or my siblings have done.
Yeah.
But I do know the effects of that.
Yeah.
It's definitely deep-rooted.
Yeah.
And coming up till someone's vomiting it out. Do you know what I mean? So I do see the impact of what you were saying on relationships. I live that. Yeah.
It's a hard one because if people are not willing to look at what's happened.
Yeah.
And say to themselves, do you know what? I didn't protect my children. That's a hard, that's a hard kind of truth to own.
Yeah.
Because the repercussions of that could be people will judge you.
Yeah.
People will say that you're not, that you were a bad parent or you're not a good enough person and look at what you've done.
Yeah.
You know, that it's fear, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fear of being judged. And That's for most of us, you know, maybe for all of us.
Yeah.
That's too painful for us to be able to sit in that and to know this is the truth.
Yeah.
I didn't protect my children, you know what I mean, from this.
Yeah.
And it takes a level of maturity and some serious work, you know, with yourself.
Yes.
To be able to sit in that space where you can say, do you know something? No, I didn't. I didn't protect them. Or, you know, I was depressed.
Yeah.
Whatever the case. Because it doesn't have to be domestic violence. It could be a multitude of different things.
Because I would say My mum did protect us.
Yeah.
And she protected us by getting us out. So when we look at her, we look at her as a superhero. Mm. Like, you got up, we fled by night. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And she got up and she got out of it and made her own life for herself and became a professional and stuff like that. Mm. And at the same time, I have compassion to say, I don't know how that would have felt at 27 with three kids. You know what I mean? Being the victim of domestic violence and thinking, well, where's my next move going to be financially? Mm. How am I going to cope on my own? I don't know how that feels. So I have such a level of compassion for her and an admiration and honour to say, despite that, you still did what you had to do.
One of my main issues, even just for me personally, was about not feeling that I was good enough and feeling that I have to prove myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I then do is I then will downplay myself. Mm. I will kind of elevate other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, completely dismiss myself,
you
know, of any kind of props. Part of that is because we're meant to be humble.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is about, I always felt that I wasn't good enough. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. A specific example would be like, I remember I struggled in school, all throughout school when I was young. Being born in the 70s, the education system wasn't really geared towards your different learning styles learning patterns and, you know, the way how people think.
Yeah.
And I really struggled because I really struggled with how information was delivered. I didn't quite understand it. So I thought I was dumped.
They just streamed like top, middle, bottom. That's it. And that was
and
it.
And I was always struggling, you know.
Yeah.
And I was left with this feeling of feeling like, I was a failure. I'm going to fail.
Mm.
My dad also reinforced that. He was the first person to say, you're chupid, you're nonce, you know, coming from that kind of West Indian background. And they actually think that that's trying to get you, you know, we're just trying to encourage you to do better.
You're too stupid.
You're too stupid, you know, and you know, I can laugh about it now, but I was totally mortified. I used to get grounded for not knowing my times table, just all sorts of nonsense.
We lived the same life. It was madness. Mine used to say, do you want to be in Tesco? Stuck in Shell.
That's what it,
after a parent's evening.
After parent's evening, they're looking at you.
I'm feeling it.
like you're, you know what I mean? You ain't got no ambition. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And so I've carried that. Throughout my life. Plus, obviously, you know, it was a thought in my head. And obviously my dad, you know, I don't even want to totally blame him. Yeah. But, do you know what I mean?
They did the best with what they had.
Do you know what I mean? Our parents' upbringing was very different. Yeah. But it's something I carried through. Mm. Plus, I didn't do well in school. So it was almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, so I'm like, me, I'm chopping. I'm not academic. But I, you know, the expectation was you go to school, college, university.
Yeah.
I did it. Struggled all the way through it. Which is why I said, me, I'm never studying again. Not doing it. No way, Jose. It was so traumatic for me.
You mentioned not feeling good enough. Mm. That there was an aspect of being humble and then there was another maybe darker side of thinking that you weren't good enough. How has that affected and impacted any relationships that you've had?
Oh, it's had a massive impact. I think for me, you know, dating people who were deemed as more intelligent than myself was a way of almost kind of pacifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not good enough, but, you know, I'm dating somebody who is good, who in my eyes, you know, is good and they seem more intelligent than me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you don't realize it. And I think had the conversation or had anybody have brought that to my attention years ago, I would tell them that they're lying.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Yeah.
I'm dating them because I really like them. We get on well. Mm. But no, actually, the truth of the matter is that I always had a lesser kind of a negative kind of view of myself and what I was able to be, who I was, you know, and as a person that, you know, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I have this person, then I am deemed as good enough.
Like a prop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think once that was dragged from under my feet, that rug, that safety rug was dragged from under my feet, I was then left with just myself.
How was that dragged from under your feet?
Well, So there was a breakdown in my marriage very, very shortly after my daughter was born, my first daughter was born. And all my fears that I'd feared in terms of I never wanted to be like a single parent. It all then became a reality. And I'm thinking, okay, so who am I now?
Yeah.
How, like, what do I do?
How
do I take care of this child and not feed or give her, I didn't want a repeat cycle of what I'd experienced. Because my mum and dad, you know, divorced when I was 16. So I thought, and I'd always kind of, I was always the kind of person where I wanted to make sure that I was doing the right thing. And I thought I'd done the right thing. And yeah, that was a very bitter pill to swallow because I now had to confront myself. And I had to own
the truth.
Own the truth of how I'd viewed myself. And that took years. Years of explorative work. Very, very painstaking explorative work.
What is a parent going through? What are they dealing with? Because it's evident they're not able to look after their child. They're not able to train and mold their child's character. What are they doing? What are they dealing with?
They're dealing with themselves. They're dealing with themselves. So if a parent isn't taking care of their child, then that's a reflection on how they're handling themselves, how they're taking care of themselves.
What do you think? I mean, in your experience, what's going on?
Often depression. You know, some parents, a lot of parents go through very, very low points in their lives. I can definitely attestify.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you ain't got no money. You've got to keep a roof over the head. Bills are coming in. Money ain't flowing. Relationships with family, intimate relationships, whoever, you know.
Just saving face.
It's so hard. Yeah. It's hard for us as parents to take the mask off. And take the mask off of perfection off. But what we don't realise is what we're feeling inside is being transferred to the child. The child is picking that up. And what the child does, and as we always say, that a child is just a sponge. They're just a product of their environment. And they're reenacting what you're feeling about yourself.
Wow. See, I'm thinking about my little one as you're saying that, because I'm just sad.
And often,
and I'm like, why are you sad? I'm just sad because you're not happy with me. And I didn't say that. But maybe I'm doing something.
It's a transference. You're transferring.
Just give me a minute. That means I'm saying I'm not happy. And I'm not actually saying that.
But she's maybe you're transferring something into her that you're not even aware of.
Wow.
And it's when you go and you take that time to really kind of explore, all right, what's really going on with me? Then you're able to then own certain things. Actually, I'm tired, so I'm very kind of short. So the children get the rough end of the stick, as opposed to, you know, recognizing self-care and actually I need to have a break. I need some time to myself, or whatever it is that you do to take care of yourself. You know, everybody's talking about self-love is this big buzzword right now, but actually, and I found that quite difficult, actually, self-love, because coming from a Christian background, you think self-love means that you worship yourself.
I did think that.
Above
you
God.
You can't love yourself.
You can't love yourself. You have to love God first.
But you're supposed to love yourself in order to love others.
If God's made us in the image of himself, why are we then not loving ourselves? Why do you understand? And we then kind of like get into this cycle of, oh, no. You don't give yourself props. You don't kind of celebrate yourself because you've been taught, no,
it's wrong.
You're supposed to love God first. You know what I mean? And then what happens is, that's why, you know, mental health is so prevalent. I think it's always been prevalent. But because we are now a lot more educated, I think with the rise of technology and things, we're now more aware that actually it is so important to take care of yourself. Mm. And that, for me, helped me, that kickstarted a journey for me into investing in myself, exploring my stuff from my past. It's taken years, 2.5 years with a therapist. I've never invested so much money.
And you have to pay for that.
And it's very expensive.
I thought that was actually part and parcel of the profession.
It's part and parcel of the profession. You know, once you're qualified, you you don't have to have therapy, although it's probably a good idea that you probably be in therapy, because you're holding a lot, you're containing a lot. It's a lot. And I know for me that I become quite overloaded very quickly because I'm juggling many balls. For me, I need my therapy. I need 50 minutes where I can just say about whatever, anything that I want to say. And I feel so much better afterwards. That's part of my self-care.
So for someone who does not have the ability to access, I suppose we do have the ability to access, but financially maybe you couldn't afford a therapist. How do you self-care without that outlet?
I think, so there's some key fundamentals that you need to have. A, you need to have a good support network. So support network could be really good friends. Because, you know, I'm aware that not everybody has a good relationship with their family. I'm fortunate enough to have a good relationship with my mum, my siblings, you know, my extended family members, where I can, you know, I can have a moan to. And, you know, and funny enough, my brother and my sister are both in the caring. My brother works in mental health and my sister's a social worker. So we can kind of banter off of each other. And my mum has worked in kind of like a social care setting when she worked. So we get it. My friends, I've got a group, a small group. You have to kind of know who you can be totally honest with. When you find those who you can be totally, and I mean, when I mean totally honest,
to the bone.
I mean like bearing your soul. The pretty, the ugly, the uncomfortable, everything that you can say to, and it doesn't shock them, they don't judge you, but what they will do is they'll be real with you, and it's done from a place of love. They just want to see you win, so that means that you, they have to have honest conversations with you when you're not doing the right thing. It's important for them to be able to pull you up,
Where do you find them?
I've got
but where do you find
them? I think you have a relationship with yourself first.
Yeah, that's interesting.
When you have a relationship with yourself first, automatically that then will disperse to the people around you. When you're able to be transparent and be open and be honest with yourself, then it gives others permission to be open and honest with you. And that's how relationships are built.
Oh, you attract the right people?
You attract the right people. You know, people are ready to, you know, open themselves up because everybody is wearing a mask. We're all wearing masks. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to be caught slipping. Do you know what I mean? Everybody, we're all trying to, you know, have our stuff together or act as though we need, you know, everybody's got their stuff together and everybody's looking at everybody else thinking, why, they look like they've got their stuff together and look at me, my life's a mess. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think once, you know, you're able to actually fully take the mask off. And you will attract people. And it could be long-time friends that you've had that now you've now gone to a deeper level. And you can engage in that kind of in that kind of relationship. So the support group, the support network is really important because they will hold you when you need to be held. They will tell you off. Not tell you off, but they will tell you the truth. Tell you about yourself when you need to be told. But they will also affirm you when you need to be affirmed. And it's vice versa. You do exactly the same. Because we do lots of reading. We read lots of self-help books and they're amazing. But if you're not able to put that into practice and you're just relying on yourself and you think you've put it into practice, the theory is null and void. You've just wasted time. You're just reading. So in order for it to actually be fruitful, it requires your support network being able to help you to move to that next level. So I've got my therapist.
You've got your support network. Family,
yeah, and for me, a relationship with God.
Yeah.
You know, I've had my own struggles with my relationship with God. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. I think, you know.
So have we all.
But not everybody will admit that.
No.
Not everyone will admit that. And I think I had to be really bold about actually... I struggled with believing whether he existed.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when, you know, things happened that I thought I had completely kind of safeguarded myself against. Mm. And I felt, you know, I was very aware and I was doing the right thing. And it happened.
Mm.
And I thought, well...
Why'd you let that happen?
Why would you let something like that happen to me? Do you know what I mean?
Mm, mm.
And I remember kind of... I went through a really, really particularly rough time. And I just said, you know something, I'm beginning to think that, God, you know, you don't, God doesn't exist.
Mm.
And it was difficult to even admit that to myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can distract ourselves by doing the most, but actually we're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And I had to be open and honest. Well, I don't think I believe anymore.
Mm.
And, but what I did say... is if you are true and if you are real, I need some proof.
Yeah.
And
I'm intrigued to know what a journey. It was a journey.
It's been a journey.
So it wasn't like a lightning bolt across the sky.
And people think that and maybe to an extent maybe I thought that was gonna happen.
It wasn't a set of house keys in your hand.
No, brand new car. No.
It was a journey.
It was a journey and things got worse before they got better.
Wow.
And that was rough.
Mm.
And you know